Nico. I must thank Nico because they outshined everybody by giving us their documents well on time. Members were able to go through their documents. Thanks very much to you, Nico. That was very professional. These are members of this committee. Let me introduce Honorable Nyanda over there. And then next to Manyanda is Honorable Novello Mack. Then in front here we are having Honorable Muzizi. Next to Muzizi is the Honorable Museki. Then at the back they were having Honorable Dr. Van Heerden at the back. In front of him is the Honorable Darrell West. Then you are having Honorable Leon Fielding. Then it's yours truly, Mr. Mkwen, Chair of the Committee. The member who is just entering now is the Honorable Sikwelo Sikwega, our Bush lawyer. We have been interacting with our secretary, Grace. The Department of Correctional Services is also here. I think you know them very well. Okay. Now you'll know them. You'll know them. What we are going to do will allow you to talk to us. Immediately thereafter, we will open the floor for members to ask questions. That is a session that is very interesting. The question answer session or comments, very interesting. Then from there, you respond. The department also will chip in to respond to some issues that you might have touched in your presentation. So feel free to be at home. What separates this committee from all committees in Parliament is because we are not just talking in general here. Members usually they want to hear what I'm saying about their respective provinces. Unlike other committees, they'll just talk about but if you don't say something about a particular province, you feel a bit offended. So I'm just warning you beforehand. On that note, without any waste of time, unless if you want Umamu Cholingana to formally introduce the members of the department, I'm fine. I'm sure. Really? Is it? Wow. Can I now hand over? I don't know, in terms of seniority, you tell us. I suspect this is the boss. Can I introduce your team, madam?
Mr. Chair, woman rule. Mr. Chair, before I go on, as much as we were good in getting our report to you, as you say, in time, we were a little bit concerned that there are some typos, so I want to apologize for that. Technology failed us. Just a few typos, and I'm sure you've picked it up. I'd like to know about process. My name is Therese Solomon, and yes, I'm the Executive Director, and Celia Dawson is the Deputy in NICRO. We have a hard job, but an exciting one. And I know we have challenges in South Africa. Mr. Chair, can I ask for process? If people receive this beforehand, should I go through it? Or do people want to ask questions to that? I don't know what process you'd like to follow.
Yeah, what I'll prefer, madam, just talk to the documents.
Okay.
Just talk to it.
Okay.
Because I know you know those issues. That's it. Mm-hmm. Talk to them. Because by reading the
document,
just talk to the documents and then we'll take it from there.
Okay, I think if I'm just to talk to the documents and if you've read it, for NICRO, the main purpose and the one thing that we really want to focus on is social reintegration. And yes, if you look at what we presented very quickly, what we presented was really looking at the concerns, first of all, on the budget, and I want to just raise maybe a few issues, and then we can take it forward for discussion. One of the issues that we raised is on social reintegration, and we say when we look at the budget of the Department of Correctional Services, it still does not put enough resources into this area of work. Now, we know that correctional services have gone on and planned and is really trying to focus on this area. But if one looks at the budget, you know, for example, in 2005-2006, it was 6.5%, about 8% in 2006-2007, and 11% in 2007-2008. And we're saying that this is important, the whole social reintegration, if we want to reduce the rate of recidivism. The one very important thing I said to the portfolio committee on corrections is that we have to acknowledge as organs of civil society and government, it's not only government, that we've really failed in our attempts to effectively rehabilitate or reintegrate ex-prisoners. And the current rate of recidivism obviously is a proven fact that as a society, as South Africa, we cannot only put the blame on one department, we have to look at an integrated approach. We have failed in our mission to effectively reintegrate ex-prisoners. Now, I said this, and I said, I've been in the field for 24 years, in the field of correction, crime prevention, offender reintegration, and 24 years ago, what was so interesting, we discussed the same problems we're discussing today. That's in my little time. I say that little, it's 24 years, over 2 decades. And what I said to the committee is that it's time that we found creative solutions to the problem. We must stop discussing the problem. We must stop saying, yes, we have overcrowding. Yes, you know, the rate of recidivism is extremely high in the country. Yes, correctional services is overcrowded. What are the creative solutions that we have to start finding for the problem? And we raised some of the issues here saying that as a country, there's the issues around partnership. Now, as much as our new, and we know our democracy is very fragile at the moment, we've been discussing partnerships with civil society, organs of civil society and government. I still don't believe we have it right. I don't believe that as civil society and government, we truly know what we mean by the word partnership. And if we look at our relationship even with the Department of Correctional Services, what I'd like to see is a more formal, structured partnership with government. So we must stop saying, yes, we have a relationship with government, civil society, and government says we have a relationship with civil society. We have to put systems in place to ensure that government holds civil society accountable and civil society in turn can hold government accountable. We should all have outputs that we need to achieve to address the problem that we faced with. Now, on the issue of rehabilitation and reintegration, the one thing that we raised in the paper, and I'm not going to go into absolute detail here, is the issue of family reunification and family reconstructive services. And we're saying that if you take a person and put him or her in prison, there should be probably a legal framework in place to say we've got to work with the families of that prisoner, male or female prisoner. Because when that prisoner is released, that prisoner goes back to that home or that community that is totally destructive. Now, we bring your attention to our presentation saying if a child is found to be in need of care, we have the Child Care Act, and the one thing that's important there is that you have to work with the family to ensure the return of that child to that family. And that's a legal requirement in the Child Care Act. And I believe that for prisoners, we've got to do the same. If we want to break the cycle of crime and violence, we've got to do that. We've got to start saying, okay, what are the methods and strategies we can use to actually ensure the effective reintegration of this prisoner or ex-prisoner into the community? Now, the other issue, and look we write a lot on it, the other issues on employment, and that's really my pet project. We know that when prisoners come out with South Africa's high unemployment rate, don't expect them to find jobs or walk into jobs. So what else can we do as both government and organs of civil society to ensure that ex-prisoners are gainfully employed or self-employed? And what we've done is we've redesigned our reintegration model, because as Nicola, as much as we've been 96 years in the field, we also have to admit that we haven't had the national impact that we wish to have on offender reintegration. So we took a very critical look on what we're doing for offender reintegration, because if a man or woman comes out of prison, it's about meeting their basic needs. You don't meet their basic needs, there's a very good chance that they'll go back to prison. So we've come up with a model that we will be presenting to the Portfolio Committee on Corrections next month on prison labor and what we're calling social enterprises. Now, you know that there is projects within prison where prisoners are involved in either labor, skills development, or even producing furniture or farms, those kinds of things. We want to say to correctional services that we've reconceptualized our model, and we want to work in partnership with correctional services to pilot this model. Now, you know, I always say don't moan about funding, but as an NGO, we don't unfortunately have the funds. We're looking for that in the corporate world at the moment to actually say, let's start these pilots and let's see if we can have a better impact. On ensuring that we have effective strategies and models for offender reintegration. The other thing that I'd like to raise is when we look at prison labor, I don't believe as a nation we're really focusing on the issue. It's really the old system of, yes, prisons get paid a little bit for the labor they do in prison, and so be it. But I think we need to think out of the box again and say, okay, what can be done? We're saying that perhaps a little bit of that money can go to the family to actually keep or meet their basic needs, to the family of that prisoner. And a little bit of that money should be saved for his or her return to the community, so there is a base for them to work from. Most of them come out of prison, they come back to stark poverty. You know, and we're talking about the majority, we're not talking about your white-collar criminals that do come home to do come to better homes. The other thing that we want to bring to your notice is the issue of alternative sentencing options. Now, the one thing we believe that we shouldn't use alternative sentencing as saying it will reduce prison overcrowding. But what we should be saying is that there are some offenders that should not go to prison, that do not prove to be a threat to society, that can be rehabilitated more effectively within community. And we've also got to face the fact that at the moment, the way the prisons stand with being overcrowded, it's not conducive to rehabilitation or proper reintegration of offenders. So we wanted to say that we need the support of government to push for the use of non-custodial sentencing when people come before the judiciary. That's absolutely important. And in so doing, I think as a country also, we will be able to say that, listen, we have proven as a country that it works, but we've still got to prove that. We've got to now start thinking of solutions rather than just focusing on the problem. So I want to just say these are issues that I picked up, and if I've missed anything, I'm going to ask Celia, if I've missed anything important from you. These are issues that we as an organization would like to pick up with government and say, let's think out of the box and let's look critically at what strategies and models we can put in place to make sure that we're not talking about the same problems of overcrowding, recidivism, prison conditions 24 or 25 years in the future.
Good. Is there something else?
Not at this point, Mr. Chair.
You can keep your mic here. Thank you. Thank you very much for the presentation. You managed to identify some issues that really would want us to debate. I know, like my colleagues have made some notes about the presentation. They will talk to them. Thank you very much for that. I think we're now going to enter that that stage where I will allow members to interact with you in the form of asking questions. Honorable Museki, followed by Honorable Sitreka, Honorable Mkizi, Honorable Mek, Honorable Manyosi, Dr. Panjerten, Honorable Daryl West, or all of us. In that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, for making this presentation. Chairperson, my friends at work, as I listened to the presenter, one got an impression that what Nico is saying to us is about is a problem of conceptualization or alignment of the conceptualization between that part and the execution on the partnership issue. What is the actual problem? Have we ever interacted for the department to try and bring an alignment around that issue so that problem can be overcome? If you can get an indication on that, Chairperson. On the second one, Chairperson. In the report, the NICOR raises the question of the department having failed to meet its assessment objectives in 2018. Yeah, that's what you are having in the report also. If the department could say something, because that's a criticism to the department. Employment of the prisoners because the skills gained from the former prison, the skills gained from the prison are lost in the employment. Now, you know, one of the biggest problems that we're sitting with is the private sector. Private sector that is refusing to change these people into their employment. So they say they have criminal cycles. You are strategically planning. Of course, in partnership with the department and other places. Has that engagement happened? Or are you intending to do something about that? Those are the three questions that I wanted to share with you.
Thank you very much. So that we're able to refer to each member, that is the Honorable Museki. Maybe you can know these questions because I'll allow members to ask questions. Just know them. So when you respond, respond once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just note all these questions. So you say, Honorable
Well, it is possible that 24 years is not a child play. Not to be able to talk the document. You will talk the document because you have been dealing with this matter for 24 years, which is the longest period in employment in that, highly appreciated. Having said that, I think it is a bit strong to say the department has failed on the rehabilitation because of recidivism. Because if you look at the figures, the statistics, they are pointing to the contrary. I'm not even the might, what the report was on the side. I think what we would be saying is that we have not completely managed to ensure that recidivism doesn't happen. I mean, I think that would be a fair input. Which then takes me to the issue of saying, as an NGO, have you managed to put yourself in the shoes of the state or of government and the executive in particular and administration? In a sense that we are always criticized for giving preference to people who are offending or who are in conflict with the law. Whether in terms of treatment, when the inmates are in, they are taken to Lazarus or the hospital for treatment, whether it's on the issue of their rights and so on and so on, that they're in the luxury hotels and all that. And you find that society says, no, it's better to offend for you to get the benefit. Now, if you talk now about employment, as much as people establish their own businesses, people will say, okay, for me to get a job, or to get a business, I must commit crime. Because the chances are great that I'll get a job. Now I'm saying, how do we deal with that? In a way that is able to take society forward, but at the same time we don't experience problems that we have. Because our economy is experiencing structural problems, structural unemployment, in a way. Now I'm saying, that's a fact. That to me, I think is critical. But you are raising another issue, which I think I share the same view. An issue that says, and I think the judge, before you spoke about it, it was quite strange that the judge has identified it, in saying that we are in Africa. The Afrikaner, the Indian, the colored, and Africa. Who is an African? And the Africans believe in extended family. You know, it's not a person that your family is just you and your kids and your wife. It doesn't happen. I mean, except in your European English way, that family is you and your wife and so on. I'm saying, therefore you find that even if a person doesn't have the immediate family, they are relatives. Therefore, it's important to touch base with those relatives to ensure that they are part of a rehabilitation process, program. I agree with that. The second one is the community. That a family is within a community. Now, it means that the community must mobilize to be able to prepare itself to receive a person who has been incarcerated. Meaning that we call that in security language, a debriefing. That this person must be debriefed. So that you are integrated here. You know, when you are away, what things are supposed to be done. And I agree with that. Which I think the department must put more effort in that respect. Mobilization of the public and the community. So that the community can play a role in this thing. It's not something of government, it's us and them, community and government. I share the same sentiment on that, which I think is something that has to be increased a great deal in dealing with that. The issue that you are raising, a partnership. I mean, NGOs are never harmful. I mean, they can only criticize you, but they're never killing you. They can never kill you. And I find them as being useful, they are useful NGOs, because they are able to come with a perspective different from yourself, and therefore they assist in the forward movement. We hope then that even ourselves as a committee, the partnership is beginning, it will be a long lasting one. But depending on how you treat us in the process. Now, I want to conclude then by saying, I think your document is quite a useful document. Safe to say that it would be nice to hear all these alternative sentences. What is your take on them practically in terms of what is to be done and so on? Because we talked about earlier on with the judge to say maybe the way we are sentencing is incorrect, that everything must be put locked in a four square walls and so on. Maybe we must look at it a different way in terms of ending this. Now, it would be nice to hear from you how do you deal with it. That one. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. That was the Honorable Sitrega. What does it say?
Honorable Chair, I feel that we need to deal maybe two at a time because people are talking and lots of points are coming up and we may lose it as we go along.
That's why I said to just make a note.
So it's long.
Make a note now. Just make a note. Welcome to the third committee. Welcome to the third committee. I told you. You are going to really enjoy. In that order. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, indeed, the report it does reflect some of the things that one would be like to see changes. But however, my question arises on page 3 of the presentation, where the NGO is critical about the cuts of the budget and compare it to the 2006 budget estimates. But now in order to equate this, they go on and say the substantive support is given to improving security hardware and employing more staff. Well, I would not probably know if we take the point of staff. We visited the Krugersdorp prison some other days, a few days ago. The number of prison, I might probably not quoting the exact number. It might have been plus minus 400, if I'm not correct. I'll be correct. But my point is based on that, on weekend, in that amount of prison, there were only 6 prison warders employed on that particular day. Now, that statement does not tell you that indeed we do need more staff. Because we don't have the comparison. It is better if you make comparison in the classroom that so many children per teacher. But in us, in the correctional service, I don't think we have that comparison as to how much a prisoner should have prison work. So, probably if we could elaborate more, it might help us. Why we want to improve on that. It itself to say also the security. They are part of security, but I'm sure they need more security than what probably is needed. If we go on page 4, where you talk of a focus on rehabilitation and reintegration. Yes, I do agree with you people. But I need to be probably helped how to understand this with your concept of family reunification and reconstructive services. And you go on and say you would like to appeal that it is taken into consideration by the correctional services. Yes, but I don't know probably how you people approach the family. We have had, you know, we know talking about the reality on the ground. Once a person is in incarceration, you talk to the family, to relatives, say, how about this person? It's just a minor offense, probably to be out. We don't want to see that person. What would that department do? What more can they do? Would they now take this person and dump it at the doorstep of those people? Because once you are there, even children, when children are to be given to you in the custody of parents say, I don't want to bear any responsibility. I don't want that child. If you bring it out, you can bring it out on your own record. Those are some of the things you would probably be educated. We might take the point further. Yes, everybody would like to get that bosom. Let's come to the last question on page 6. Yes.
I think it's actually linked with the very same where you talk of overcrowding and alternative sentences. We would like to have that, but when you say you, as Negro, strongly propagate the use of alternative non-custodial sentencing, though you say not as responsive to overcrowding, per se, but in the conviction that certain individual can best be rehabilitated within the bosom of the family. That's where my concern is. I have some serious wonder if you go to other countries like America, when a person is being probably released to serve and is outside, I don't know what they were calling those things that you put on the prisoners, just to identify that person, even if he or she is somewhere else. I just lost the terminology of that thing, that you cannot break it. It will actually reflect on you wherever you are. What you're doing, what are you up to? Now, we don't have that. Now, if we release these people, I also can do that. If you release them into what themselves, sentences outside, like we used to see in the past, do you think in that way those people would be rehabilitated? I don't think so. Because they need a supervision. In all of that, when a person asks for a parole, you should be knowing exactly about that person. I think that was critical, that, you know, putting these people in the warehouse, we don't make any headway of correcting their behavioral pattern. Now, if you put them outside, what more would we see? Ma'am, I don't criticize what you're saying, but what happened is that the very department told us that if a person is about to be released on parole, he thinks twice before tomorrow comes that I'm now out. He commits crimes or he fights with somebody else so that there will be a further time. Then he or she cannot go out because he doesn't have employment, doesn't have an accommodation, doesn't have everything, no relatives. The home that he knows is the incarceration. How do we, who can help us to sort of grapple and cross that Rubicon? Thank you.
Again, just to assist for his reference, that was the Honorable Mzizi. Mzizi is M-Z-I-Z-I. But in Sotho, Mzizi is something else. Mzizi is something else. Yeah, and the meaning thereof is something else. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. In that order, Doctor Van Heerden.
The chairperson, I will stick to the point. In the introduction, on page 5, you refer there that family reconstruction will necessitate a legal framework. Question. Have you made already proposals to the Law Reform Commission maybe to investigate this matter? And if so, when did you do that? And are you expecting any response? Second question, on page 6, maybe just a question, this is rather a remark. It's a very laudable model which you are conceptualizing here, namely to continue the process of the teaching of people in the jails when they get out, but then that can create perception that the lawful unemployed people are not catered for. And then finally, the question again: you refer to alternative sentencing structures of which we support, but. And then you also referred that you said that certain crimes or certain prisoners are not a threat to society. What kind of crimes do you have in mind here? We are not thinking about petty crimes like theft of a bread or small little things. What other crimes do you think could not be a threat to society? Or other criminals committing certain crimes are not a threat to society? Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. That was Dr. Fan here then. Yeah, the Honorable Darawes.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'd like to ask. I thank Ms. Solomon for her presentation. I've had a bit of contact with Nitro as well in Bloemfontein. There's a very attractive lady there from Kreinberg. And I must say, Nitro seems to be run by woman power, lady power. Anyway, it's very good. I've got a few questions. The first one is with regard to the report, and I asked this also to Judge Erasmus, the inspector of prisons, with regard to, you say to the DCSX, Correctional Services, planned in 2005-2006, you have 23% of all offenders assessed in respect of the risk so far, a prerequisite for the development of a sentence plan. I could ask this question direct to Correctional Services, but what sort of risk profile is there at present? In other words, somebody goes to Correctional Services, is there just a card that says you've been sentenced for 20 years and for murder or whatever, and that's it? Is there no profiling done whatsoever? I find it a bit incredible. I'm just asking you. The other thing I want to ask is with regard to offenders. You say you will obviously affect the delivery of, on page 4, the Department has set itself a target of 50,000 inside work opportunities in 2005-06, but only 3,400 were provided. This is out, I'm just taking an estimate, the prison population is probably 150,000, used to be more 180, but a lot have been released or put on parole. So I don't know, that is, would then only be about 15%, 20%. Now, we've been to certain correctional places where they do give metalworking and pottery and so forth, but on a very small scale. What would you suggest could be done on a larger scale? A short list of moving old factories into correctional services, which is an impossibility. Planting fruit trees, planting vegetables. I'm just asking to get up to that number. Then, of course, we talk about reintegration into society of offenders. I've estimated, I've just done a small sum here, that you would need between 2,500 social workers and maybe psychiatrists, if you had to, you know, do a proper job, to 5,000. 2,500 would give you 60 people per person. 5,000 would give you 30. Do you think this is feasible? Do you think we could train or get that amount of people to really make it an effective program? Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was the Honorable Darrell West from the Free State. The last one in this round, it will be Honorable Magnosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must first thank the presenters for the presentation. I wish that there were a bigger number so that also come. Wofford West. Yeah. My first question is on page 2 with regard to the statement that says we have not been able to implement models for offender reintegration that have a proven success rate. Can the presenters expand on the models? I've heard them suggesting reintegration at the start of the sentence. But what are the other models that are in their minds? Can they elaborate on that? And then on page 4, they are saying we have to put all effort into social reintegration programs, both within the prison and upon release. And they further say, with the present rate of recidivism, civil society organizations need support from government to affect reintegration programs for released prisoners. Now, my question is, have they already made any representation to government to that effect, and what has been the response of the government thus far to their appeal for these collective efforts that they are proposing? And then on page 6, they are saying that upon release, with South Africa's high unemployment rate, prisoners have the minimal chance of securing employment. That presupposes that they have been trained inside. The skills they obtain in prison is often wasted upon release, as there is limited or no opportunity to continue employment after release. Now, it's a comment. Maybe we are thinking only about training that leads to employment. We are not thinking about, or our emphasis is on skills that lead to you going to look for employment primarily, and not skills that direct you or direct inmates to employment or to self-employment. That is, we are not thinking about self-help or self-employment orientated programs, but programs that lead to you looking for employment. Maybe then the emphasis, if that is the case, the emphasis should be on self-employment rather than skills that lead to you looking for employment, in which case then you will be desperate once there is no employment outside to consume you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I will stop here in this round. Allow Nicholas to respond. I know your bucket is full. This was just a warm welcome to the college. Over to you.
Honorable Chair, I'm a fearless woman. I'm going to ask you to assist with some of them, and I'm going to answer some of them. The first, Honorable Mosefi, if I got your name wrong, please tell me. On assessment objectives, when we wrote this in our report, we took it from the department's report. And the department said it didn't meet that objective. So it's not us saying that the department didn't meet the objective. And then on the issue of employment and the private sector, yes, that is a problem. And yes, we do face challenges in South Africa because, yes, civil society is saying, throw them in jails, throw the key away, lock them up. We do have that issue. And I think as an organization, as much as you say government sits with the challenge, we understand how difficult it is to manage corrections, because corrections is on the receiving end. You know, it's the judiciary, it's the legal system that puts people in prison. So I think as an organization, we also have difficulty. But what we're trying to do now is to educate civil society, to actually tell every South African that if we're proudly South African, then we will all stand up and say we will help to break the cycle of crime and violence in this country. We have to take that responsibility. And we have to turn around the mindsets of South Africans. And you may sit there and think, oh my God, this is impossible. I'm saying it's possible. If we could have the democracy we have today, then I do believe that we can turn the situation around. I don't believe that it's impossible. So yes, I don't believe that the private sector is somewhere that we should look at for employing ex-prisoners because of the unemployment rate in South Africa. But I do believe we can create the opportunities like self-employment, like running factories that come off an offshoot from the prison. And this is a lot of out-of-the-box thinking, and it's time that we did that. So if I haven't answered your question fully, just pick up your hand and I will try. Because a lot of you brought the issue of employment up, so I'm going to try and do bits of that for each of you. And then the second speaker, Honorable, I didn't get the name. Honorable, with the M also. Okay. No, not in Zizi. I think what was said there is that it was a bit strong to say the department failed in rehabilitation because of recidivism. But what I said, I didn't say it's the department that failed. I said we failed. Civil society, government, we have. And let's acknowledge that. Let's acknowledge it. We've done, as an organization, as NICRO, I can tell you success stories, but they're too small to have that national impact we're looking for. And if we're looking for that macro impact, then we have to say we failed. We've got micro impact stories. We've got micro level successes. Not good enough to really say we're able to reduce the rate of recidivism substantially. And that's all of us together. All of us. Okay. And I know it may sound unfair to say that, look, you know, we haven't been really good, or we haven't made a good success of rehabilitation. But I'm going to stand very firm and say no, not the macro impact we want. Maybe the micro level impact. And I know you talked about the NGO putting ourselves in the government's place. Where I stand as a person, I see us all as one, that we're all working towards creating South Africa and creating this democracy. So it's about us being critical of each other. Government saying to NGO, look, you're not doing your bit, and NGO saying to government the same. And then, yes, civil society is very angry when we have the media really saying, you know, violence is happening in this country, we're failing, we're not going to get 2010. But I think, if I can talk about us as an NGO, we're looking at the marketing way to actually get South Africa thinking, every citizen thinking, of how he and she can contribute to turning this situation around. I believe it's possible. We read a very interesting article by a marketing guru, and I can't remember his name now, that wrote on how effective marketing is in this country when it comes to selling goods. And the same guru is saying, but why can't we do the same on the issue of crime? You know, how can we actually sell to the public a concept to say all of us will stand up and assist in dealing with the issue? I think the issue of people saying we must commit crime to get back into prison. Okay. And I think, yes, you're right. We are facing the reality that when there are some prisoners, and I don't believe it's all prisons, but the Social Services will say yes to that. There are some prisoners that say it's better to be in prison. But I think I'm in the minority. We must look at the majority that do want to also come back into society and that do fail and do go back. So let's say we are sitting with a challenge in South Africa. We have poverty, we have prisoners, we have society saying they're tired of crime. But I do believe that if we think strategically, we will find a solution. And we can come to you with a huge presentation of some of the ideas we've come up with. If we have time, we can share some of that with you. And then the whole African thing, that we in Africa, the extended family, I do agree with that. We've got a very exciting thing that we're going to be having, and it's really Celia's baby, on indigenous practice, and that's how that actually is applied in South Africa within the criminal justice system. We're having a colloquium next month on the issue, and we're getting the traditional leaders involved, really looking at the issue of indigenous practice and its application in the criminal justice system. We don't have a model yet, but we're exploring the concept with the necessary key people in South Africa. Then I'd like Celia to deal with the alternative sentencing one. It's also Celia's baby.
This is also raised by speaker number three, Mr. Mzizi, so we'll address that at the same time. By alternative sentencing, we obviously mean non-custodial sentencing. Sentencing options that don't use prison or that use a term of a very small term of imprisonment. Now, our law in South Africa, as you might know, makes provision for this. This is nothing new in the country. As NICRO in the years, even before I was born, because we are 96 years old, even before I was born, NICRO introduced the concept of community service to South Africa. And that, of course, has grown. We now have correctional supervision. Since correctional supervision has come into the law books, community service has decreased in its utilization by the judiciary. And that is a sad reality. And we want to resuscitate that again. So my first point is that our law provides for non-custodial sentencing. The second point is that there is a myth throughout the world, I think, that prison or imprisonment is the answer to criminal activities, or is the answer in the first instance to criminal activities. And we have a view that it is not, that it is probably the last resort that one should turn to. And because we have now so consistently sentenced people to terms of imprisonment, it has failed in its effectiveness. And you have heard all the stories. You know that they say prison is a revolving door. You know that they say prison is a university of crime. You've heard it all. Sometimes that is harsh, sometimes that is ill-informed, but there is a sense that not all imprisonment works, particularly if you look at the recidivism rate. Now, as far as NICRA is aware, there is no formal scientific research that has given us the actual recidivism rate. All right? But that having been said, anecdotally we know that it's probably much higher than 50%. So in other words, of the people that come out of prison, probably 50% or more will go back in at some stage. That is sort of a working definition that we use. We are saying that many of the people that are sentenced to terms of imprisonment could do better if they are sentenced to some programs in the community. And that is our approach. We have now, Andy, we are in the process of developing and increasing what we call our basket of services, our programs that we can present to the courts, which the courts can use as sentencing options for people who are convicted before them. And it's a very simple thing. It's not a complicated brain science, rocket science concept. There are people, and let's say anecdotally, maybe half of those, maybe a third of who are in prison now. We should be outside, we should have been sentenced to programs where people can work with them in changing their offending behavior. That would leave the prison with more scope, with more resources to devote to people who are a danger to society, who should be locked up, from whom society should be protected, and who should be protected from themselves as well. And that will give the people, the staff in prison, a greater prospect of being successful in the work that they do. This is why we say in our notes that we are not, with alternative sentencing, we're not aiming at reducing overcrowding in the first instance. It might have that effect. What we are saying is that imprisonment for certain classes of people is not appropriate. Now you come to the vexing question, now which are the classes of people? Somebody did ask that. Or alternatively, for which crimes can you go into prison and for which can you be sentenced to a community kind of sentence? That is difficult to say. Each person has to be assessed on its merits. Each person is different. And dare I say, and I know you won't agree, but there might even be somebody who committed serious assaults, who should be sentenced to a community non-custodial option rather than a term of imprisonment. It depends really in the first instance on the person, his potential, his circumstances, what is actually wrong with him. There are people who might be charged and convicted of theft, but on assessment, it shows that that person should get a term of imprisonment. So it's difficult to run, to give you a shopping list of charges and kinds of people who should be out of prison serving community sentences. Generally, obviously, we can say young people, young offenders. We should be given the opportunity to rehabilitate them outside the walls of prison. Mothers and some women who have families at home, maybe. People who are charged with petty crimes, maybe. People who are first offenders, maybe. We have to consider this because we can't keep on building prisons and prisons and prisons to house all these people who are committing crimes. So in short, that is our take on alternate sentencing for Mr. Mzizi and whoever else asked. If I could just address the question of the lack of staff on the weekend, and surely that is a budgetary priority. Yes, it is. I fully agree. And we were probably guilty of also critiquing DCS in the past for the numbers of staff on duty, for not having maybe an appropriate norm of staff to prisoner. I think there should be a norm. I'm sure there is. And so on. And we are delighted that this is receiving attention. The point that we try to make in our notes, though, is that DCS has about three objectives, I think, two or three objectives that are quoted. And we are saying that the white paper does not prioritize these objectives. And in our view, all of them are important, and they all require decent levels of budget. That is all that point tried to make. And it is so. We don't have to debate the numbers. We're just looking at the pattern and the trends. It is, to us, it appears that social reintegration has received little budgetary attention. And all we're asking for is that it receives more, because we don't want these people coming back into jails again. And then I'm going to deal with the reconstruction family reunification issue for all those who raised it. This is a revolutionary idea, but it is not new to South Africa, because as Zuleya has mentioned, it is the system that prevails in our child care, our child welfare system. Where we remove a child from a family, the law insists that work be done with the family home, so that that home is prepared to have the child return to it at the shortest possible time. And that is the principle that we're looking for. We are working off the premise that most of crime is caused by the social conditions that people reside in. There are people who have individual and personal deficiencies which weaken their characters and personality, and they end up in prison, but we're talking about the wider majority of people whose social conditions make a strong contribution to the fact that they commit crime. Now, that having been said, if we send somebody to jail appropriately for something that they have committed, we spend lots of energy and money in prison rehabilitating. But we are not spending similar energies and resources on the family home, and here we use family in the widest definition, in the family home or even in the community from where that prisoner came, and which was in part contributory to the prisoner landing up in prison in the first, or the prisoner committing crime in the first instance. So we are simply saying, let's find a way of also attending to the families and communities where the prisoners originate from. Now, if there isn't a legal framework and legal obligation for us to do that, we're not going to do that. And no, we have not gone to the Law Reform Commission, But maybe that is the next step we should take. We haven't really canvassed this idea very broadly, so maybe we should first consult with other stakeholders, and then maybe the next step is write up something for the Law Commission. I think we have dealt with Dr. van Heerden's questions, with the exception of the social enterprise issue and the fact that we would be offering work to ex-prisoners and then citizens who are compliant with law and who are unemployed.
Dr. Kinyajan, I think you do have a valid point there, and we sit with the same issues when we discuss what we have to offer to prisoners. I think the one thing that South Africa needs to see is that we're able to reach success in turning a prisoner around from crime. For example, we've been exploring models all over the world. In Africa, there's brilliant models on social enterprises, and somebody asked about that too. You know, what are the models we're talking about? In India, there's brilliant models on how this is working. And if some of you can make it to the next meeting of the Portfolio Committee, we're going to do all the detail there on prison labor. And what happens in these countries where it's very successful, they engage the families of the ex-prisoners. So obviously you're engaging community members. So when you're engaging those community members and they're able to put food on the table and they're feeding their families and extended families, it has a rippling effect in that community. The word gets out, you know, that, listen, here's a success story. This is working. So it's not only the prisoner being fed and clothed. It's not only the prisoner it's the extended family. It's the children. It's that type of thing. So I think the way we're going to market it in a way that we're saying, look, we want to break the cycle of crime and violence, and this is how we're going to do it. And we're not only going to focus on the ex-prisoner. We're focusing on members of the community who's already been affected by that person or persons who's already in prison. Yes, it's a challenge, and it's something we're going to give more thought to, of how do we market to the community and how does that work. But if, you know, with the models in Africa and in India that we're looking at, it has a very positive effect on the community because they see the benefits of the model, you know. So that's the kind of thing we've got to show South Africa. The other issue on alternative sentencing, I think that Celia dealt with it. Are you okay with that? That one's fine. Then, I'm saying the Free State person because the name, Honorable? Darowitz, am I right? On the issue of this profile, I really think that Correctional Services has to answer this question, and I appreciate that. I don't want to answer it on their behalf. And then the creation of jobs. I think that's something that's what we're doing. We want to say, how do we upscale what is presently available in the Department of Correctional Services? And outside, how do we do that? And that's what we'll be presenting next month. And what we're also saying is that we've got to ensure that this model that we're going to implement, we cannot do it without the help or without the partnership of the department. It's impossible. We've been researching models also across the world, both in Africa, India, and some European countries. Very rarely use the European countries because we think Africa has a lot to teach us too, you'll be surprised. And places like India and very different countries from your British and your American theories that are in existence. And what's very, very clear there is that somebody said it's impossible to run factories from prison. And some of the countries, there's very, very successful factories set up in prison, running totally like a commercial operation. And again, it's that mind switch change and the changing in how we think about things. Very successful furniture business. And it's running on commercial lines. It's a business, you know. And yes, I know you can come back to me, and yes, we know we face the challenge of what legal framework, what does the Labor Relations Act say, what does Correctional Services Act say. Those are things we've got to look at. But again, I think we're exploring things that not really been explored to the extent in this country before. I think Honourable Darrowitz, you talked about the start that's needed for offender reintegration, and can we reach that? And I think I'm also very aware, even when I look at NICRO, we need far more staff than we have at the moment, and because of capacity and resources, we can't get there. And I think the Department of Correctional Services faces the same challenge. And I don't have a quick fix solution for you, whether Treasury can make more money available, is this possible? We also know that we've got a shortage of social workers in the country. So those are challenges we face as a country, and I don't have a quick fix solution there at all. And the last speaker, I think, was Honorable Manyote. Am I right? Manyote. Yeah, okay. Just on the expansion of the models, Celia said something about the models, but if you want more, maybe Celia can say more about the offender reintegration models we're looking at. Okay, you talked about, have we made representation to government about the assistance we need? I think the partnership with government, if you look at what welfare has done in this country, we've got a very historical partnership with the Department of Social Development, long historical partnership from, I think, 1930 on when they started. But with the other departments, like the Department of Correctional Services, Department of Justice, where we do a lot of work and we don't get any money or any, not much support, we haven't really got a very structured relationship like that of the Department of Social Development. And yes, it's something we're working on. And yes, we seek to keep people in the department, and we will continue that process to get to a point of having that structured relationship. And I'm talking about a memorandum of understanding saying what does the department expect of us to deliver and what would we expect from the department in return so that we can meet our objectives and can be successful in what we do. So yes, those negotiations are happening. They're in process at the moment. And then, Honourable Manyoza, you also made a comment about, should we be looking at skills and then people can't find jobs? Should we not be looking at self-employment? The model that we'll be putting forward to the Portfolio Committee next month is that we're looking at self-employment. We're looking at employment. We're looking at having a factory and employing ex-prisoners and also family of ex-prisoners. So it may be a wife, it may be a partner, it may be an older kid that's out of school. So we're able to start the community to say, look, it's community working here. You know, you have to change that mindset. So that's the model. We're not only focusing on the skills they have in prison. That's one of the focus areas. It's not the only focus areas. I think we've covered everything. Celia wants to just...
If I could just pick up on the reintegration models that the same speaker raised. Reintegration obviously is a very, very difficult thing, and I don't think anywhere in the world is there a model that has proved 100% successful. So I think it was the first speaker who spoke about... who said we shouldn't really be referring to the failure of rehabilitation because we have such a high recidivism rate. I think that point is well taken because recidivism is high throughout the world, even in countries like America. And however, that said, we think in NICRO that there are one or two things that make reintegration successful. The one is certainly the area around work, around income generation, around opportunities for income generation. Yes. around meeting basic needs. That whole area must be attended to for each and every prisoner. Not only do they need money to meet their basic needs, but they also need a job or income to underscore their self-esteem once they're out. Remember, they've been in prison, they've been away from wife and family, talking about the married man. In their absence, the wife has taken the reins, has taken the lead, is working. The prisoner comes back in a kind of a submissive and inferior role. And in order to help him build his self-esteem, we have to get to the point very quickly of work. So that is the one element in reintegration which, if it's not there, it increases the risk of reoffending. And, you know, we are very keen to, as Soraya has said, to broaden our social enterprise model and to get it working. The other element of reintegration that we feel should be there is that of family and community support. So that prisoners are not the pariah of the community when they come back. You know, a prisoner will often tell you, as the staff here will attest, they've served their time. And it's true, they have served their time. We should draw a line under that imprisonment once they are released. And they should be able to carry on with their heads held high. And this is why community support is important. And we are now trying to establish two things. Mentoring for prisoners, so that each prisoner, and this is an ideal, so I better not say each, but as far as we can get, prisoners to have mentors from their community who will assist them in adapting to community life on a kind of a 24-hour basis. When there's an issue, when there's a crisis, when there's a problem, when he needs somebody to talk to, there is somebody in his community, hopefully in his street, that can serve that role. And then linked to that is reception committees. This will allow communities to take responsibility. We often say that communities have a role in crime prevention, but then we don't spell out to them what their role is. And we feel this is one of their roles. Through reception committees to receive prisoners once they come back into the geographic community, to say, here we are, we will be monitoring you together with your mentor, and we will be keeping an eye on you to see that you don't reoffend again. So that there's some kind of community ownership of the problem. After all, it's not the government who caused, in the first instance, the person to offend. It's more likely to be family and community conditions. So those are the two elements of the reintegration model that NICRO uses now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. To NICRO. Yeah. To Usesunum Tigedelo, Commissioner Veni, Alfred Sestiago, Tebo. Why is there no structured formal partnership with NICRO? I mean, they've been saying this since they started this. Why is there no formal partnership with them? Why? I mean, now, you know, as in my other capacity as a coach, you know, as a tradition leader in my area, if someone come and feed like this, there's no way I can ignore them. There is no way. Why can't we do that? You know, I mention these people by their names deliberately. Why? Anyway, there were issues that were touched besides this one, the container. So the department can now respond to some of the issues that Nicole raised there. Let's see how far can we go.
Thank you, Chairperson. Incidentally, Chairperson, I was going to start there on the last page, page 7, where NICRO was highlighting the issue of partnerships. And I'm going to do something very unusual. I'm going to quote somebody who's sitting next to me with the risk of being disciplined later.
Commissioner Peterson in his opening remarks this morning, when he was informing this committee of his focus areas as Commissioner for Correctional Services, he mentioned the first thing that he mentioned was the need for building strong partnerships with stakeholders. And for me, this obviously includes reviewing the current relations that we have with organs of civil society, looking at the gaps that are there in the current relations, improving on the current relations, and ensuring that we have more formalized relations. We've been talking as a department about issues of service level agreements or memorandum of understanding and so on. Micro, for example, in the Eastern Cape, we do have a document where we agreed, because of many challenges that we had in our relationship, and we decided that as a province, let's do it because it's workable for us. But I believe that, as the commissioner said, this is something that the department is really looking into. And incidentally, on a lighter note, he does have relations with Nicro. I believe he worked there at some point in his life. That doesn't mean that you would have any biasness towards Nicro, I hope. But there are historical relations with that. Again, Honorable Chairperson, referring again to the discussions that we had this morning in this committee, where we were alluding to the challenges we have in terms of rendering some of the programs that the department is committed to render. We alluded to the issue of scarce skills, our challenges of attracting and retaining scarce skills within the public service, not only within correctional services. Some of these programs that we planned, issues of risk profiling, issues of designing rehabilitation programs, rely heavily on these skills, which we do not necessarily have as a department. But I believe my colleagues will be able to add. But I think some of these issues, we touched on them this morning, and we even said, in a case where we can't retain these skills within the public service, what alternative models are there out there? How can we use other structures to be able to come and complement what we do as a department, so that we can still be able to achieve the objectives that we have set for ourselves? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, I thought these two ladies from Micro were friends of mine. I'm sure we remain friends. But let me thank them for the report and for the issues that have been raised, because some of the issues have been discussed with them, as they have said that negotiations are underway. But my colleague has just said that we introduced this quality assurance process, for lack of better words. And that was to ensure that the department moves away from the previous approach, where external service providers would come in and go, you know, without any evaluation of what value was added and so on. So it was first to audit who do we have as partners, and then secondly to enter into a formal relationship. And I think the one on family, fortunately they were both there when I went to present to them of our white paper. That is very important. I'm glad they raised it, and it seems they have thought even further how it can be done. Because they are correct, the system before, the family was the first part where you went, even as a probation officer, you know, to work with the family and work with the offender and so on. Somehow, I think as we were working in an institution like corrections, the commissioner would have to think of social workers going to families, and we don't have enough of them. So the partnership comes there that we would refer them to the organization so that they could do the reconstruction of the families. But our white paper already covers that, because it says correction is a societal responsibility. It says the first seat of correction is the family, and that you need to engage the family while the person is inside, when the person has left, but you need to involve families in general to prevent further offenses. And that takes us to the recidivism. Most countries define what they mean about recidivism because they define it differently. Others would say it's when you commit the same offense and come back. Others say it's when you commit an offense after having an offense or having served a sentence. But I'm glad that Celia was covering that you can't judge recidivism by one aspect and say NICRO and DCS has failed. Yes, you can judge us by the extent to which we have addressed the needs of the offender and prepared the offender not to re-offend. But the family comes in immediately, because you have to look at the role of the family in accepting the person back, but furthermore, to look at the society itself in terms of giving a second chance to the offender. Then you can say where the problem is. But I think on the importance of the family, we do agree it's very important, because some families are dysfunctional. So if you don't address them, then of course when the offender leaves and goes back, there will be a problem. But something was raised in the morning, I think, of families who reject the offender. I think the commissioner would remember recently when we called the family to address on something, and the family said, we're not interested. They didn't come. So that's the work that needs to be done before, I think. So the family is important. The last one that I would address, because I'm sure Mr. Mutsiki would address the social reintegration issue. Pardon? Yeah, it's a profile. I think the Honourable Member was saying he can't believe that we don't have any information about an offender. It's true, we do. But what we're talking about is the new approach, which evolved from the white paper. From the white paper, there was an offender rehabilitation path that was developed. And part of that, the first stage after welcoming and orientation of the offender, is the risk and needs assessment. And that is a different kind. It's not just saying this person has committed murder and so on. It's going beyond that. So that when you have two people who have committed murder, their profile may be different. One would be maybe a habitual criminal, what they define as a habitual criminal in criminology and in the criminal procedure. But one may be somebody who was defending themselves, self-defense, and murdered a person. So the profiling, you collect all the information about the offender, you analyze the data, and then you profile. And it's not profiled by one person. You would have a psychological profile, a health profile, so that you know the person in totality. And you are able then to have a sentence plan for correcting the offending behavior, for development, and so forth. So I think that is the one. And there were specific reasons. The colleague has said one of the reasons, the people who are needed for the work, but also the tools and everything else and the training had not been done to the extent that the department thought it would be done, because people need to be trained in the new approach. So in that way, perhaps that was the problem area. But the profiling will be done, and it's not that you don't have information, but it's the new way, so that you must be able to have a profile of the offences, but also of individuals that you have in your area. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thanks again, Chairperson, and let me also extend our appreciation to NICRO for the input that they have made. What becomes clear to us, and I think it is Mr. Mosheki, no coincidence about it, who made this point about conceptualization and partnership. The sense that one has is that we have not dialogued enough between ourselves and NICRO. You would remember, honorable members will remember, that we made a presentation to yourself around our concept of social reintegration, which reminds itself on community involvement. the family and all organs of civil society playing a role in respect of the work that we need to do to ensure successful reintegration of the inmates. It's a work that cannot be done by the Department of Correctional Services alone. The best practices out there, and in particular around Zimbabwe, when one has to talk about community reintegration, has been the involvement of the public in ensuring that people that ultimately get released from the correctional centers receive the support that is necessary within the community. And hence I'm saying the health problem is that we have not been dialoguing enough with Micro. But I also think that the point that the regional commissioner is in shape was making around the agreement with Micro arises from the work that we have already initiated to say, let's engage with the public out there, different service providers, and say, if as an example were to release a person into your care, what kind of services will you expect this person to render to yourself? And that was a way of modeling community service orders to say, we can't release people to go and clean the streets if the society in general is not going to feel the benefit of this thing. And so this cuts in both ways around the issue of employment, but also the involvement of the community, but also ensuring that there is a sense of alternative compensation to the victims of crime. Members of the committee will know that the minister, and in particular in Western Cape, we've been profiling quite a number of initiatives that we have undertook in the Western Cape around building of housing, around building of churches, and so on in the Western Cape. And this for us, without thinking about employment per se and compensating inmates for it, is about us saying to them, you have offended the public, and therefore there is a need for you to show remorse in some way and compensate accordingly if you don't have the financial means to do that. And so much of this thing has been aimed at addressing that specific issue. Sijabu has talked about the issue of recidivism, repeat of sending up, say that one. One of the things that we are doing in respect of this, and I think we'll come to conclusion of this issue very soon ourselves as a department, is that we have commissioned a study with the Center for Security Studies to develop options for ourselves. As Jabu is saying, there is no perfect model out there to make a determination of recidivism. And so I would be very sensitive to throw a figure of 50% for casualty on the table to say that that is a general estimate and it might even be less or more than that. I think we need to come to terms with the difficulty of determining recidivism ourselves as a country. And as I say, we have commissioned that, and in due course of hoping to get the results of this thing. I was going to talk about assessment here, but I think Sijabu has done justice to this issue. But it's important as well to talk about the issues of employment somewhat. It is not only about the issues of labor and the inmates and so on, but it's also about the efforts and the values that as a country we have developed over time, where, for instance, we have opened ourselves the market and ensured that there is fair competition in the market out there. And so at some point when we made consultation with the Competition Tribunal, the Department of Trade and Industry and so on, part of the point that was made on their part is that this may generate unfair competition, especially if the products of your producer are going to compete with the products that are already out there in the market, because the prices may differ. How do you determine your product if you don't bear or if your input costs are perhaps not the same? So that has been a concern at that specific point. And part of what we have done is to run a reconsultation again with the Department of Trade and Industry, Treasury, and so on. Because we are saying that even on our part, the remittance that we pay to the inmates may not be adequate. It may be important that if you want to be effective about social reintegration, we should enable these people, whilst they are within our facility, to build an income base to support their own families out there, to avoid the problem that she's mentioning, that families reject them. That's one thing. And therefore, the amount of money that we pay to them, and this is a point of debate, and we're still putting this out, the amount of money that we pay to them must somewhat be comparable to them competing as one thing. But we should also keep a retainer on their behalf so that when they go home, they can at least walk into a family. And you can imagine, I think 90%, if not more, of our inmates are men. There are people with families. Having committed crime, having disappeared for 15 years, coming home with nothing, it serves a purpose for members of that family to say, no, we can't take you, you are more of a burden to us, more worse if the society out there cannot encourage you, or people are not willing to employ. So we're looking into building a firm foundation for the social reintegration by working into the opportunities that will enable us to ensure that these people indeed go back into their families and roots, did not find alternative other homes where they can go. And around the issues of alternative sentencing, I think, as I say, with death is not talked enough, and that might be a problem. I think there is a sense in which we agree, and this is the premise of our social integration position paper, to say that indeed not everybody belongs in prison or in correctional centers. There must be a way in which some people are diverted into the community. But to do that, we need to create credibility for that system of diversion, of alternative sentencing. And that is the premise of our social integration concept document, to say let's build that foundation there so that even the judiciary can have the confidence of sentencing people there. And so I think we need to be able to talk more with NICO so that we don't run parallel. As they develop basket of services, there must be the kind of basket of services that must be consistent perhaps with the manner in which we're looking at this. And perhaps you can even learn more from themselves. The last issue, and I'm sensitive really to it to the extent, and I know Chatterton has invited us to talk, I thought that this would be an opportunity for us to keep audience to Nick and not talk more. But I'm provoked by the issue of security vis-à-vis rehabilitation that they have raised amongst others. And I just want to make a small point around that. I think we should be in tandem with the development of crime in the country at the moment. As a department, we're increasingly beginning to be cautious and wary about the changing profile of our inmates. And therefore, we feel strongly somewhat that we cannot continue. Rehabilitation can never be successful unless elements of security are intact within our facilities. And therefore, our investment into security, both in terms of personnel and infrastructure, is not a coincidence. This thing is a deliberate effort on our part to say, for us to be successful in rehabilitation, security must be one of the critical pillars of our work around rehabilitation. So if you can't look at rehabilitation and look at security as something else, especially for ourselves as a department. So it is a bit unfortunate that there is a sense of contrast in the document and perhaps in the manner in which NICRO looks at it. But as I say, that's really just part of the comments that one would have wanted to make, Mr. Professor. Thanks.
Thank you. No, thanks, Chatterton. I think Mr. Mateki has covered, because that was the one area of concern. So you can't compare social reintegration and the amount of investment you're making on development of staff, because it's dependent on availability of personnel and well-trained personnel and retrained personnel in terms of the new direction. So you need to make that investment there. And you cannot commit and put more investment on a concept that you are developing. You'd rather put it more on developing the people to understand and be ready to deliver that. And even from our social partners, from civil society, there are still models that are being developed. They are not there yet in functioning. As it has been stated that we failed over the 90-odd years in terms of succeeding with the social reintegration. So there's a whole issue that the honourable member Museki raised about reconceptualizing and getting the conceptualization correct in terms of how are we all moving together in social reintegration. Obviously then, as you would add in more resources to security, but you also need to invest more on staff to get them ready, that when the concept is moving and when you are ready to implement the model, then you've got more people that are ready. And the issue of skills was alluded to. And the question was not responded to around the figures of 2,000 social workers that are required, because we need to look at, out of the professionals that we need for all these programs, how many do we have in the country, and what are the alternative methods that we can put in place to retain staff as well as to utilize what is available in the country as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Very brief. I think I want to acknowledge my former colleagues. In fact, I've been their boss for many years, so I have to be harsher than the others. But I don't want to use this as a platform to engage with Nicole Chairperson. So I just need to say that as recent as 2 weeks ago, I was involved in some discussion with the national or the executive director of NICRA around many of the same issues. But for the benefit of this committee, I'm really happy to hear how NICRA is grappling, because that's exactly what it's doing. It's grappling with certain critical issues. Some of it is also rethinking. And that's the luxury sometimes the not-for-profit sector has. I want to take us back slightly and remind us of two very fundamental principles. One is the fact that we are a developmental state, and the second one is the principle of integrated governance. And I'm saying these two principles are key in how we define the partnership relationships, because let me use the example of the child justice law. We've been part, but it's being driven by the South African Law Commission, and the social sector is also quite involved. And you may be aware that the child justice bill has been trying to be born a very difficult pregnancy for many years, and it appears that it will still take some time. And the key issue, the key reason why we seem to be struggling with it, is how ambitious the bill is in terms of service delivery for children in conflict with the law, and the readiness of the state as well as civil society to implement that. Now, here we're talking about children, and if we talk about numbers, they are much fewer than adult offenders. And I really want to challenge that if we want to see partnership models that work, we need to do what I said perhaps in my introductory comment, and that is we need to make deliberate choices. Some of these idealistic interventions I think is going to be extremely difficult, but if we can make choices in favor of youth and children in conflict with the law, if we can make changes in favor of women, then some of these things we may be better able to learn from it, but implement it on full scale. I think part of the questions NICRA raised was in fact answered by themselves, in the sense that when we deal with service delivery, we have to be concerned about access and equity. We cannot have pockets of service where few people benefit. Take, for example, the principle what they want to reintroduce, the community service orders. In fact, the reason why it became correctional supervision was precisely because community service orders tended to be a middle-class option for people who are urban-based, and very few other poor people and others coming from poorer communities and rural communities had access to these things. So these are very fundamental problems that we have to contend with at stake. And I do hope that as we begin to explore these exciting models, that we really think of those things such as capacity and access and equity and rollout and all those nice concepts. I'm saying that this debate also hinges on the broader fundamental principle of integrated governance, in the sense that we cannot as correctional services look at an element of society that impacts on the system as a whole.
And I want to say NICRO and there is a draft policy, family policy, being driven by the Department of Social Development. And we all should engage vigorously in shaping that policy, because there's not going to be a, in addition to how we address ourselves in our own white paper on the issue of family and their responsibility, there's not going to be a correctional family policy, a social development family policy. So let's make sure that as we engage with a draft policy, that the issues of families and reintegration of inmates and so on are also taken on board from the perspective of dealing with it, in an integrated fashion. Just the last point, because it relates to the issue of integrated governance and the question that you've asked directly, why is it that there's no structured relationship? There's indeed a structured relationship, but perhaps the question that's being asked is, why is there no contractual relationship with NICRO, when NICRO does services on our behalf and we pay them for those services? Now, again, it's something that we have to engage with social development as a department from the angle of integrated governance, because the risk is always there of double dipping. That's historically why social development has been the one department that tended to interact with not-for-profit organizations in order to ensure that there is one accounting officer, which is the social development department, and that government broadly gets what it puts in. But we will want to have that engagement. In my discussion with NICRO, I was saying, as we take this forward, let's start with where it will possibly work best in the area of children in conflict with the law, in the area of women, and let's interact with social development around how we can begin to explore financing models from DCS side. Of course, we will be able to make a much better case if such contracting arrangements relate to treatment programs and development programs that happen within our facilities. And then lastly, the point that NICRO is making is that they're concerned about the small percentage of budget allocated to social integration. In fact, if they know the truth, they will be horrified, because what we mean there by social integration is not the type of social integration or re-establishment actions of people who have been released from prison, but largely it's about parole, people on parole, and people on correctional supervision. The issue of how we spend money to facilitate the reintegration in terms of communities, in terms of working with families, that's an area that we really have to still seriously engage with and make sure that we begin to develop what I referred to earlier, those measures in order to begin to show on results. And perhaps that's the appropriate point for me to end here, and to say to NICRO, they know very well as we do, that when it comes to resources, the dictum success follows success is critical. And all these programs that we're experimenting with, we have to convince Treasury and others where there's competition for resources that what we are doing really has results. And it's a pity that after so many years we're still struggling with research that can track recidivism, even if it's on a smaller scale. But we'll engage around those issues with NICRO. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This was very fruitful, yes? Very fruitful. Maybe let me check if Honorable Noel Mack and Manyanda still want to ask a question. Right, I'm just about to...
What's that?
To guillotine this discussion.
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be very short. Many of the things have come up. I like this commissioner. I'd like to speak about the rural. And that is that's in my line. This is two of us. In the years of apartheid, many of us were in the NGOs, and really I admire you for still being there, because that time we had lots of funding in the NGOs, but as soon as the democracy came, donors gave money to the government, and they're very reluctant to give money to NGOs. and sometimes we worked, and you never knew if you are going to get paid at the end of the month or you're going to get something. So the commitment really is there. But I would like to know, you know, your impact in the rural areas, your involvement, and how effective it is. The Honorable already said, Honorable Manyozi, I'm from Beaufort West, but there's also towns in South Africa, three Beaufort, Woodfordskip, with Ian Squirt and all those places. But you see, it's more difficult for a prisoner from the rural area. If he's sentenced, he must come to Worcester, Brandfleet or Portsmouth, and for his family to visit him in Cape Town. And those are poor families. So you maybe never get a visit. And it's even more difficult with reintegration, because in a small town, the whole town rejects you. You know, there's this thing, there are even mothers, other mothers, they play their eyes as scallum. They will avoid you. They will bring their kids into the home, saying, I offer you a young round. So it's much more difficult. It's further difficult if you are from a farm, because the farm owner wouldn't even want you on his farm while your wife and kids are on that farm. So there's a lot of it. And I think that is where it's vast areas and the numbers are not a lot, but definitely that is where you also need to make an impact. I don't know how we're going to do it, how we need to assist with that. The other thing that we've noticed, and that I've noticed, is that, you know, the population in prison and offenders is getting younger. It's youth. And in Cape Town, it's kids, drug abuse, it's stealing to sustain their drug habit. And this is going to affect our country and our nation and even our economic development in future, because now we are having these youngsters being in prison, getting out of prison with a criminal record, you know, and how they won't get employment because they'll check you. They'll check you, say, oh, he's a scallop, he's stolen, and then all this, and no company will employ you. So I think maybe they should be a strategy, especially on crime prevention. I would like to know, to what extent do you promote crime prevention, especially in that area. Then the other thing of social reintegration. The thing in Cape Town, I'm from Beaufort West, but I taught 16 years in Cape Town, 11 years in Vandenberg, Silver Stream. You'll find kids modeling them according to an early lifestyle or to a big boss. Now, social reintegration of early lifestyle a couple of months ago. I mean, he will be received back as a hero. A kid from Manenberg coming from Portsmouth, he's now a number in the big boss, you see. And that's the whole mindset in Cape Town, this whole gangster thing. You see, it's a problem for us, it's a big problem. And the youth are following these guys. And it creates a culture that crime is paying and crime is this. So, social reintegration, especially in our townships. I mean, I don't want to be in your position. I don't want to have that job for free. It's very difficult. So, the young offender and then these young people are especially a big concern for me. Then the other thing is you hear business in crime, you hear business people, but what actually do they contribute? You see, big business, and it's one of those who say, we don't want this guy, he has a crime record. But do you get together with him and sit with him and maybe educate him? Because somehow they will have to come to this party. Because if the offenders are getting younger, it's the employers that they, people that they will need in future. I think I'll stop the chairperson, but I'll thank him for the job they are doing, and I'll also plead that we support them more, definitely. Thank you, chairperson.
That was the Honorable Novello Mack from Beaufort West.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question was answered before I raised them by the director, and I'm happy that the commissioner and the NICRO are now talking to each other. That's why I'm not going to raise it. She did answer all my questions that I wanted to answer.
So, Mamia Rafaisa, you anticipated their questions and responded in advance. How wonderful. Yes. Now, I think one question for you to Soraya. This question of prisoners waking, right? And the payment thereof was given to a family. I don't know how how can it work, you know? Someone working there, but you pay somebody else. I don't know. Maybe we need some other discussion. I'll take some of these things, because I'm looking at this thing. How possible can it be, you know? I remember when we were in Canada, colleagues, you remember? When we were in Canada, colleagues, Benekal and Darren, you remember Darren? When we were in Canada, there was that prison there where these inmates who are working and they are paid. That according to the salary, they call something else. They pay them directly anyway. But they spend their money in their own whatever. Now, there's a proposal here from Sarah. My question is practicable? That I work and somebody is getting paid. How do I benefit if I'm just working and someone is getting paid at night? And I'm saying it needs another debate somewhere. Maybe. But just can comment about some of the things that were raised just briefly, because we want to zero change this thing. Your mic.
I didn't make nice while Commissioner Peterson was talking, but just in general. There's a lot of synergy between the department and NICRA. Obviously, we look at things slightly differently. We all pursue the same objective. We all want to save South Africa. We want to reduce crime. We want to reduce recidivism. But given the nature of the beast that we are, we will have a different lens of looking at certain issues. I don't think that's a frank smash. I think we're all familiar with the concept of diversity in our country. And I'm one of those people who believe that if we communicate sufficiently, we will find common ground. And that, I think, is the plea that we make. And it was said by one of the previous officials that we should dialogue more. And I think you've heard that consistently from ourselves. We should talk. There are no easy answers. The issues raised by the member from Beaufort West, I forget the name, the rural element, the young people, gangsters who are heroes, and such like, those are all the things that South Africa is grappling with at the moment. The tick problem is unprecedented in our country, especially in the Western Cape. We don't have easy answers. And I can assure you the answers do not necessarily lie in the work that you are doing. Because as someone asked before, what about crime prevention? That is where we must start. But what is crime prevention?
There is no one thing that causes crime. It's an interdependency of many social things and social conditions. And the one thing that we as NICRO do not want to say is that poverty causes crime. Because then we're insulting poor people. And we don't want to do that. And there are other countries, developing countries, that are poor, like us, India and Brazil and so on, who do not have our crime rate. So it's not cast in cement that poverty causes crime. It contributes together with something else, some other things. And that tells us too that to do crime prevention, we've got to start much earlier. Much, much earlier. And we've got to look, I believe, into family functioning. That for me is the easy answer. We've got to strengthen families, and we don't do enough of that. Family support to help them through the difficult times. Family support to help those young male adolescents. As you've indicated, the age group in your prisons or correctional centers is getting younger. And it's males. And when we see what happens in the states, you know, people hold up the states as, you know, the example we're supposed to follow. We don't believe that in NICRO anyway. But if you look at the states and what's happening with those young men who are shooting, you can see the issues of youth that are not being dealt with. And we have them in our townships. We have them, they haven't got an education, they haven't got training, they haven't got a skill, they come from a poor family, they've got no life chances. None. They've got no hope for the future. And they're going to commit our crimes and our horrific crimes in the future. So crime prevention, in the first instance, doesn't lay in the work you do. It's in the family work, and we're not doing enough of that. But I think we are happy that we've met you this afternoon. I think this is our first submission to this particular select committee. And Grace, we need an invitation again next year. and we hope this is the beginning of lots of dialogue. And we will be phoning Sis Jabu and Brother Vernie and so on next week to make appointments to keep the dialogue going. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I think we have done enough for today in terms of this discussion. We're supposed to listen to talk from 4 o'clock, but I don't see them. If they're stuck in the traffic, unfortunately, I can't hold my members at random. Unfortunately, the train can wait for any person. You must wait for it. So if they miss it, then bad luck. But they were here for them. Yeah. What we're going to do, because I'm going to request Honorable Manyosi to, on our behalf, thank both the department and NICRO. What I want to say from this side is that this was a very enlightening and informative discussion. And what pleases me most is that the brand new commissioner brought along his senior team. He didn't just send Omar Funda and Mofi Gizor. That's there for you. And this will give us more hope to say we are there. We are there. Commissioner, thank you very much. What you have done, really, it has shown that you are taking this committee very seriously and you know what you're doing. Thank you very much. even during the budget hearing, senior people were here, you know. That's what I want to see. And let's continue this interaction just to make sure that the lack of communication has always occurred. And I don't mind to phone again any time, and he also phoned me any time, and this is what you want. This is what we expect from people who are working together. That's what we appreciate really. I think those who are responsible will prepare the we'll try to coordinate that workshop. You can say that we need that workshop. We really need it. We need that workshop. The question is for how long, you know? That's what we must agree, because I don't think a day will be enough. A day won't be enough. No. Yeah, before I take everything, you know, this discussion, what we have now, to the this department, DCS, will assist us in our debate, because we now know of the real issue. On the 14th, when all of us stand in that podium to address the public, we'll know what to say, because we'll be informed, you know. You know, it's so nice to debate an issue that you are informed of, fully informed of, and we know exactly the ins and outs of this department. Yeah, let me take this thunder from Mbenekala. But before he comes in, I will allow Nico, Soraya, can have a parting shot from there, and then I will allow the commissioner to say the parting shot. Then after, Honorable Manyosi will do that on our behalf. Then call the day. I'm doing this because I don't see a cop, so unfortunately we can't wait for him. Soraya?
Quick thoughts off the top of my head. I do believe that critical feedback, both ways, both civil society and government, is absolutely important if we really want to find the solutions to the issues we deal with. So we shouldn't take it personally. We should take it as issues that are raised and problems to be solved.
Wow, staccato. Thank you very much, Soraya. Commissioner Pedersen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Now, I think I want to say to Nicro that, you know, in particular with the many years of experience and the various things that I've experimented with, and the work that Nicro is doing, it is really important that we move closer, our traditional partners, as DCS. And there's no reason that, as the executive director is saying, we do not move together and really struggle and grapple together around our resources. So we really totally committed to that, I want to assure you. But to the select committee also, thank you for all those wonderful words of welcome and congratulations. I really know that, and I've said to my colleagues, the one thing that I don't believe is that this is about individuals, it's about a system, a correctional system that we've got to build. And that correctional system includes, as Celia said, people in government, political society, such as portfolio committee and select committee and other oversight structures, not-for-profit organizations, and also the top management and our frontline workers. And I really would like that character to be built, that we build it, that system and that collective ownership and collective solution finding. I think then we will really be able to turn the tide. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Pedersen. Arun Manyosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just mention that as a traditional leader, I see certain things through my ancestors. You know, the questions that you posed to the Public Service Association, you posed those questions when somebody from Pope was at the door there. And then he heard about these questions and then he ran away. On a more serious note, Chairperson, I think the interaction between the select committee and the the other role players, that is the department, NICO and other role players, have reached a mature stage. We have gone past that stage where the department and others would shiver when they come to present to the committee. There is an element that has reached a very high stage of openness, open discussion of the issues that affect the services, service delivery, and that openness really serves a purpose, because through it we will be able to achieve our goals. There is less emphasis on the budget, that we are always given little money, because in effect what we should be talking about first is what we aim to do before we can say where are the weapons to do that. That is then go back and say, but the budget is not there to do the things that we have agreed should be done in order to reach a better life for all. The role players here seem to be serious about the partnership, collective working, even if we are in different institutions. There is a preparedness, a willingness to work together, and I think that working together will really take us to where we want to be in terms of our destination, it being none other than a better life for all. Thank you.
On that note, just a reminder, colleagues, tomorrow we're meeting in the other class of the local government at Woodstock Chambers at 9. You'll remember that on Friday, the Minister of Social Security, the National Commissioner, and everybody will be here. I'll also continue. Can I thank everybody and wish everybody well and say this meeting is officially adjourned? Thank you very much. Thank you.